Are people spending money yet?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the economy as trading gets started for the day and for the week. Shopping for better retail news and more unease about Dubai. First, our question of the moment. Where's Wall Street? Numbers are mixed right now. The S&P down just a tad, less than a tenth of a percent. The NASDAQ, the NASDAQ is down about a quarter of a percent, and the Dow pretty much flat, down about 2 points at 10,307. Asian stocks surged today, 3% or more, and European markets are mixed right now. The FTSE's up slightly. Everyone else seems to be down in Europe at this moment. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. He's with us live from New York this morning. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So big shopping weekend just passed, and the National Federation of Retailers reported flat spending compared to last year, but more people in the stores and online. I mean, how are investors seeing these retail numbers?
Well, in anticipation of the results, we had retail stocks up anywhere from 35 to 65%. So I think that investors are saying, you know, it could have been a lot worse, and earlier on, that's what they were expecting.
So, I mean, Sam, how do we see recovery when the unemployment rate is so high? How do we gauge it?
Well, investors are anticipators. We expect to see the unemployment rate peak sometime in the summer of 2010, but we're reminded that the stock market rose a good year before the unemployment rate fell below 10% in 1982 and advanced 21 months before the unemployment rate peaked back in 1990. So investors do tend to look pretty far ahead.
So we're talking historic precedents too, right?
We're talking historic precedents that I think a lot of investors hope repeat themselves, but there's no guarantee they will.
All right. Let's talk about Dubai. It's been in the news for the past few days. Today, one of the top finance people is saying the government's not guaranteeing Dubai World's debt. I mean, it sounds like the latest news will sort of aggravate investors' concerns.
It will, in my opinion. The feeling is that Dubai World, which is not a government but a private entity, is not being backed up by its own government. And I think investors here in the States are thinking, uh-oh, here we go all over again. Maybe 2010 will be like 2008, in which we are roiled by credit market concerns.
Yeah. All right. Sam Stovall from New York. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. The Obama administration is expected to announce an expansion of its Making Home Affordable program. They're announcing a plan today that'll force lenders to be more aggressive about renegotiating payment plans, all a part of the effort to keep homeowners out of foreclosure. Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with us live from our bureau in New York City. Hi, Elisa.
Good morning.
So remind us how the program works.
The government's been offering lenders $1,000 to renegotiate mortgage payments for borrowers who can't keep up. And then the lenders can get another $1,000 a year for up to 3 years. So the way it's supposed to work is the lenders negotiate new terms with the borrowers, and then the borrowers get a trial phase where they make the reduced payments for a while. If everything goes right, those reduced payments should become the regular payments for the rest of the loan. But what it looks like is happening instead is that lenders are putting the borrowers through these trial periods for a while, and then they're just going back to the old terms.
So the administration is trying to fix that, right?
Exactly. The changes the administration is going to announce are supposed to force the lenders to make those modifications permanent. So for the first thing it'll do is stop paying the cash incentives until that happens. The other thing it's going to do, the government's going to check up on those lenders daily, and it'll also make the lenders provide much more specific plans about how they're carrying out these loan modifications.
All right. Marketplace's Elisa Roth in New York. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, November 30th, 2009 at marketplace.org. If you're wealthy and you die next year, your inheritors will be in pretty good shape from a federal tax perspective. That's thanks to a convoluted legislative compromise. In 2010, the nation's 45% estate tax drops to zero, but it comes back with a vengeance the year after. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports from Washington on congressional efforts to even out the roller coaster ride.
If you're waiting for a big inheritance, you'll be especially anxious when next December rolls around.
Some people have called this the throw mama under the train aspect of the current estate tax law.
University of Michigan professor Joel Slemrod says if a rich mama dies on December 31, 2010, her heirs pay no tax. One day later, and they'll owe Uncle Sam 55% of her estate. To avoid that scenario, Congressman Earl Pomeroy, a North Dakota Democrat, wants to extend the current tax, which hits estates bigger than $3.5 million.
The real effect of it is to make the estate tax go away for 99.75% of the people in this country.
Business groups, which used to advocate eliminating the estate tax, are backing a permanent rate of 35% on estates above $5 million. But Pomeroy says that'll never fly, since the government needs the extra revenue. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Approval is likely to come this week for a follow-up to the Cash for Clunkers program. This time, the Department of Energy is targeting energy-sucking appliances. Reporter Elizabeth Threlkeld has more.
The stimulus bill set aside $300 million for a rebate program on energy-efficient appliances. The Department of Energy will dole out those funds to 56 states and territories based on population. Each will run its own program, so the value, scope, and timing of the rebates will vary. That's a lot for retailers to keep track of, says Bob Baird, who oversees appliance merchandising for the Home Depot.
It is going to be kind of complex. To the extent you have lots of local programs, it's tough for us.
Appliance retailers have been hit hard by the housing crash and recession. Baird hopes this program will bring double-digit sales increases like past green appliance deals have. But Sam Darkash, who tracks the appliance industry for Raymond James, isn't convinced the rebates will attract new customers. Most people, he says, only buy new appliances when old ones break.
How much of this demand that's created is actually incremental versus just putting $100, $150 into the pockets of someone who would have purchased that appliance anyway?
The appliance rebate program is small, just $300 million for an industry that typically brings in over $20 billion in annual sales. But Kathy Zoy says it's a step in the right direction for the economy and the environment. She oversees energy efficiency programs for the Department of Energy.
The $300 million program is a good thing. It'll be a boost. It'll be a nice marketing push, but it is likely to run out rather quickly.
But don't rush to replace that old fridge just yet. Most rebate programs won't start up until after the new year. In Washington, I'm Elizabeth Threlkeld for Marketplace.
The results are in, and it looks like retailers didn't do as well as they were expecting the opening weekend of this holiday season. But there was a bright spot. Retailers did see a slight increase in sales on Black Friday, largely due to steep discounts. Now, bargain basement prices have been the go-to tactic for luring consumers since the start of the recession. Many retailers are wondering now if there's any way to stuff the discount genie back into the bottle. Rachel Dornhelm reports.
The challenge for stores now is to break customers of their addiction to sale prices, what some are calling discount detox.
But it's a very long road, I think, in terms of really getting that consumer to really want to buy full price again.
Tom Chin tracks the retail industry for the Telsey Advisory Group. He says last year, merchants had to resort to unplanned discounts to clear merchandise. How to resurrect full-price retail? NPD Group analyst Marshall Cohen says stores are gradually phasing out discounts.
So it's really about getting the consumer to recognize, yes, there's a discount on it, but the discount isn't going to be bigger the longer you wait.
But Cohen says adjusting prices isn't the only way to get consumers to fork over more money.
It also comes down to making creative and interesting and innovative product. That's also one of the things that the retailers are trying to do, and that means that they're going to have to actually get more aggressive with innovation.
Cohen points to Apple as a company that keeps unveiling new products and services and offering few markdowns. Tom Chin says in the apparel world, the model looks like H&M's partnership with high-end designers. That means limited edition clothing that draws consumers willing to pay full price. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
In Geneva today, trade ministers from the World Trade Organization are meeting, as they did 10 years ago today in Seattle. Now, at that conference, of course, it turned into a so-called battle after police clashed with demonstrators who were opposing globalization. The Seattle WTO meeting was meant to launch a new era of global free trade, but as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, it hasn't quite worked out that way.
Dave King used to be a union carpenter. His wife, Lori, is a retired teacher. They're still active labor organizers. 10 years ago today, they were piling out of buses onto the streets of Seattle.
And people were screaming and cheering, United Food and Commercial Workers, carpenters who are holding up organize or die banners.
Now, 10 years after the Battle of Seattle, we're standing on the deck of their modest home in Portland, Oregon. It overlooks the main shipping channel to the Columbia River and the Pacific. Over the past decade, the Kings have seen ever more imports come up the river, cars, shoes, computers, toys, and they've seen jobs flow out the other way. Several years ago, an entire dry dock for repairing cargo vessels was shipped to the Caribbean.
They found cheaper labor in the Bahamas. The good jobs were exported along with the dry dock.
That kind of outsourcing to cheaper, less regulated countries has accelerated since Seattle, but global free trade has been stopped in its tracks, says Lori King.
It really put the whole issue of globalization, corporate globalization, on the map, and that's why the WTO has been dead in the water for all these years.
Not exactly, says Jeffrey Schott. He's a trade expert with the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
What really stopped the talks was not the demonstrations outside in the streets, but the divisions inside the conference room, particularly between developed and developing countries.
Schott was in Seattle 10 years ago, on the other side of the barricades. He says since then, disagreements over tariffs and agricultural subsidies have persisted, and that's hobbled follow-up negotiations, the so-called Doha Round, to establish a global free trade regime under the WTO.
That's not a great record to go a decade without bearing any fruit. And so you've seen proliferation of trade agreements either bilaterally or in regional groupings.
Schott says the anti-globalization movement that made such a ruckus in Seattle is partly to blame for giving global free trade a bad name in the U.S. So is outsourcing of jobs and economic fears due to the lingering recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Today is the day a lot of e-retailers have circled on their calendars, and over the past few years, Cyber Monday has been getting more and more attention. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is with us now to tell us whether he thinks it'll live up to the hype. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So here we are, what, just a few years into Cyber Monday, and is this ever, do you think, going to overtake Black Friday or Christmas Eve as the biggest shopping day of the year?
No, I don't think it is, because Black Friday's a sport. And Christmas Eve is always the biggest day in terms of dollars, and that's just panic-driven.
But, Alan, isn't this a generational thing? I mean, there are some 15-year-olds who spend all of their time online. I mean, doesn't that bode well for the future of Cyber Monday?
It will, but I still think there's something visceral, because no matter how computer literate you are, there's a lot to be said for going out to the mall. It's fun. It's an experience. I'm a man with three daughters and no sons. I learned to get up at the crack of dawn on Black Friday because they were all going out for the 5 a.m. specials. It's become a custom, and it's been whipped up by marketing. And the marketing guys who invented the concept of Black Friday, they've now invented Cyber Monday. And not to be overly cynical, but I've actually got a day I want to put on the calendar for next year.
Oh, boy. What is that, Alan?
It'll be Registry Wednesday. See, doesn't that sound great?
It does. It almost rhymes.
Yeah, it's close. So after Cyber Monday, we wait a day for everyone's fingers to calm down, and then we have people post what they want for the holidays. People will log on, and there'll be specials among the registry firms, and it'll be a whole new thing, and you and I will make a fortune because we'll trademark the term, and we can send people out to do our shopping next year.
You know, I think there is such a thing, though, Alan, and it's Santa Claus. So, I mean, you know.
I think that one's been trademarked. So.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get in on that one, Alan. See you at the shopping mall, Alan Sloan.
Take care, Steve. Should you take us?
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. Well, on this Cyber Monday, online auctioneer eBay finds itself in a Paris courtroom. That story from Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard.
The court will decide whether eBay has complied with an injunction banning the sale on its French site of certain luxury fragrances. LVMH, which makes Christian Dior, Kenzo and Givenchy perfumes, brought the case. LVMH is concerned that people are buying their products wholesale and then selling them over eBay 50% cheaper than their usual retail price. The company is worried this might devalue the brands. But Alex von Schiermeister of eBay says an important branch of e-commerce is under attack.
The injunction is the edge of the wedge that could spread to different categories, and which would ultimately mean that people cannot sell genuine items that they own on the internet.
He says eBay has complied with the French injunction, but fears it could now be extended to other countries and other brands. He claims the future of online auction sites could be in jeopardy. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, the British government gave nearly $500,000 for a study after a bowling technician's freak accident. It found kids are in danger of getting hurt by running down the lanes and knocking over pins by hand. They'd be at risk of getting caught in the pin resetting machine. A bowling association spokesman says he's never heard of anything like that ever happening. The authors of the report even considered making owners put barriers up across the lanes to block access, but there were complaints people wouldn't be able to see what they were aiming at. Check us out online with our scratch pad. Scott Jago's there waiting for your thoughts at marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.